understood where the hearing was. But we did mail it to him about 10 days ago. For whatever reason, it didn't arrive at his box. He has not seen a copy till now. We're agreeable to putting it over to a later date so he can have a look at our report and think about it before he testifies. That's what he would like to do, if you're amenable to that.
So the testimony we heard remains part of the record?
I would think so, yes.
So they don't have to come back? You don't have to come back unless they really want to.
Any objections? What's the next available date?
I don't know. We'd have to look at this.
I don't have the calendar right here.
That's fine.
We'll do it as soon as there's an available time.
Would you make sure that Mr. Lobdell is notified of that date?
Okay.
As soon as possible.
We'll do that.
Okay, that's set over. Now please read the 3 p.m. time, sir.
434, accept Citizen Campaign Commission first report to the City Council and citizens of Portland.
Auditor Blackmer.
Good afternoon, Mayor, members of the Council. I'm Gary Blackmer, Portland City Auditor, and one of my responsibilities is to oversee the public campaign finance system. And one of the keys to success is the 7-member Citizen Campaign Commission, which monitors the campaign cycle and makes recommendations. And I'll be introducing the chair in a moment, but I did want to say that it's been a very hardworking, talented, and dedicated group, and it's been a great pleasure to work with them. So let me introduce Leslie Hildula, the chair, and she'll introduce the other members that are going to be making a presentation.
Thanks, Gary.
I think we all have copies of the report.
You do have, they have copies.
Yes. Thanks for being here, folks. When you speak, would you please state your name for the record?
Yes, my name is Leslie Hildula, Chair of the Commission. It's a pleasure to be here today. When we were first here in September, I remember having that sort of deer in the headlights kind of feeling, and it's been an exciting time. In May 2005, you passed an innovative campaign finance reform, campaign finance fund, and we became the first city in the nation to offer a full publicly funded campaign financing. So it was in place for the 2006 elections. And in order to help monitor that, you established the commission, of which I'm chair. The members are Stan Baumhofer, Christy Mason, Len Norwitz, Jared Spencer, who has since resigned, Andy Linehan, Jessica Sweeney. Andy Linehan and Jessica Sweeney are the co-editors of the report. We began meeting monthly in September, monitoring the election, and it proved to be much more lively than we had all anticipated. At the end of the primary season, we were able to begin our report because, as you know, the incumbents won. There wasn't a need to go to the general election. At that point, we invited everyone who had participated in the primary election to come and be interviewed by the commission. 10 out of the 14 candidates came and talked to us. We also talked to other political leaders and stakeholders in the system in preparation of our report. We recognize that the 2006 season was a limited test of the Campaign Finance Fund. However, it was interesting. We received a lot of good feedback from it. During the primary, 14 and out of the 14 candidates, 8 filed their intent to participate in the 2 city council elections. 3 candidates actually qualified, and 1 was later decertified as a candidate, and everyone admitted that it was much harder than they expected it to be, to get certification. When we organized a report, we looked at the charge that we were given by the City Council and by the things that you had written about the campaign fund, and developed 6 goals that we used to sort of evaluate the program. The first goal was reducing the perceived influence of large money donors and other special interests in the campaign. The 2006 election suggests that it does help reduce the influence of large money donors, although the fact that we had incumbents in both races tempers that assessment. We did notice that in terms of numbers of actual people donating, that they were easily double in the races where people were qualifying candidates. Second goal was reducing the overall campaign spending. Again, it was a case where in 2006, less money was spent than in 2004, but we didn't have an open seat. So we're looking ahead to when we have an open seat to really evaluate that. Supporting more competitive elections, including increasing the challenges to incumbents. It may not have increased the number of challenges to incumbents, but in our opinion, it increased the effectiveness of one of Amanda Fitz when she came as a qualified candidate. Goal number four was increasing representation of underrepresented groups among candidates. Again, it's a little too early to tell. One of the things we heard in our interviews, and these interviews were with politicians outside of the city council races, our two county commissioners, their take on it was we really have to wait until an open seat comes up before we can make an assessment of that. And five, increasing candidate contact with voters. I think that was a case where it truly did that. Both candidates who were qualified said that they believed they spent more face-to-face time with citizens rather than the time spent in fundraising. And six, the last one is to assure appropriate protection and management of public funds. We'll be talking a lot more about that because we had two candidates, Commissioner Eric Sten and Amanda Fitz, who successfully participated in the Campaign Finance Fund, complied with all the rules and qualification requirements. However, in one case with Emily Boyles, there were issues, and we will deal with those in greater depth. In short, the Commission believes that the program shows promise and that it's worth retaining and it needs strengthening. I was fortunate to work with some very talented and knowledgeable people on the Commission, people with a great deal of expertise and background who they contributed to write this comprehensive report. And today I have two of them with me, Christy Mason and Jessica Sweeney, one of our editors. So I'm going to turn it over to them now to go through the recommendations of the report.
Thank you, Leslie. I'm Christy Mason, and Jessica and I are going to briefly review each recommendation so you know what came up in our meetings. Even if we don't make a recommendation to change what's already in the code, we thought it'd be worthwhile for you to know some of the issues that we spent a long time talking about. The recommendations are broken down by phase, by campaign phase. So if we talk about the exploratory phase when someone is interested perhaps in participating in the fund, we have two recommendations. The first is to have an optional informational workshop for people who are interested in the fund. And we also recommend a mandatory training program for the candidate or staff after that declaration of intent form is filed. It was clear last election cycle that although each candidate is charged with knowing the code and knowing the rules, that judging by the number of calls that came in or didn't come in, the elections officer judged that people were not really taking the time to know what they had to do. So that's the training section. We also recommend that any potential candidate who has an outstanding money judgment should be required to resolve that before receiving public monies. Excuse me. Then in the qualifying period, when a candidate starts collecting signatures, we also looked at a number of things. The first change we recommend is changing the timing of the period for collection of contributions to July 1st through January 31st. And this is a change from the current period of September 1st through March 31st. We heard from candidates and others that it would be helpful to be able to be out collecting signatures when the weather is warm. And we also heard that because the voters' pamphlet deadline came before the end of the period, before that it would be helpful to know who would be on the ballot before the voter pamphlet statements were due. The length of the period, which is 7 months, is going to stay the same. We looked at seed money limits and decided that we would keep those in place. We heard that the limits required some tight budgeting for startup costs, but we decided to leave those in place. We do recommend a slight increase in the in-kind contribution limits. That reflects our thinking that the election night parties would be better paid by in-kind donors rather than actual public funds. Jessica.
I'm Jessica Sweeney, and I'm going to talk about our recommendations regarding the qualifying process. Currently, candidates running for city council or auditor who choose to participate in the campaign finance fund must collect a $5 contribution from 1,000 supporters. We believe that both thresholds should be retained. Our interviews with participating candidates consistently showed that they felt the thresholds were reasonable and could be achieved with proper time management, organization, and personal commitment. The system currently allows supporters to contribute the $5 qualifying contribution either by cash, personal check, or money order. During our interviews with participating candidates, there was a strong majority who felt that the $5 bill contribution was attractive to supporters and was consistent with the grassroots spirit of the fund. Some also suggested allowing contributors to pay with a credit card. While we feel this proposal is worthy of merit, we don't believe it is the right time to implement such a change. We are recommending a number of other significant changes for the next election cycle. Credit card transactions would add yet another layer of administrative complexity. We recommend maintaining the current methods of payment at this time, but review future elections and consider making the change if conditions warrant it. Currently, when supporters contribute the $5 to participating candidates, they must sign a form that allows for multiple signatures on a single page. The form is similar to those that petition gatherers circulate and provides little information on the campaign finance fund and what is required of each contributor. We recommend a brand new form that makes it clear that signers are contributing to a participating campaign finance fund candidate and that the signer is a resident of the City of Portland and has registered to vote. The form should make it clear that there are substantial penalties for both the person seeking signatures and the contributor if perjury occurs. We also recommend making the form available in other languages to provide further clarity for contributors who are not fluent in English. In the last election, participating candidates were allowed to collect $5 qualifying contributions from all residents of the City of Portland. Going forward, the Commission recommends that the rules be changed, so that only residents of the City of Portland who are registered to vote are able to contribute. This change will allow the Auditor's Office to verify that all contributions come from residents whose voter signatures are on record. If this change had been in place during the last election cycle, when the fraudulent collection activities of Vladimir Golovan occurred, it is unlikely that the forged signatures would have been missed.
And then we turn to the verification process. The auditor's office still has to verify all the signatures, and in that area we made several obvious recommendations. The first relates to turn-in. The auditor's office could be subject to a heavy administrative burden if a number of candidates decide to turn in 1,000 or 1,500 signatures on the last day of the period. So in order to avoid that, the recommendation is to require 30% of the required number of contributions at the beginning of December. And we did consider some of the possible political effects of requiring that percentage, but we believe a percentage of this size does not really make that large of a difference, and it does address the administrative issues that were brought up. We also, under the recommendation that every single contributor has to be a registered voter in the City of Portland, the auditor has to look at each one of those and determine whether that's true. So under an informal agreement with Multnomah County, that office, with help from the auditor's office staff if necessary, will do that verification work. This is very different from the internal check that was done last cycle. The commission also recommends that members of the public, and that would include press and the commissioners themselves, would have 5 days after turn-in of signatures to review the signatures and raise any issues that are noticed. We also recommend that the auditor be granted authority to reopen the certification review if evidence comes in that may disqualify a candidate. That takes care of some of the delays that seem to be inherent in the timelines in the last election cycle. And the auditor should also be allowed to seek immediate revocation for the qualifying period violations and require immediate repayment. Then in the election period, once the candidate has qualified and now has the public monies, the auditor's office turns its focus to spending issues. We looked at requirements for reporting the contributions and expenditures. And because the candidates will be using ORSTAR, which is the new state reporting system, we recommend that the system be used to post expenditures, and we're recommending a shortened timeline for reporting. Currently, expenditures have to be reported within 30 days, and we recommend that they be reported within 14 days, with a shift to 7 days before the election, which is, I think it's 42 days before the election, that also tracks state law. That timeline will catch spending violations much earlier. If they're going on, we'll see them quicker and can do something about it. And we also recommend that the auditor review those reports at least every 14 days. And finally, we recommend the auditor's office remain open the weekend before the election to review reports as they are filed late on Friday or over the weekend to be able to report to candidates when they may be eligible for matching funds.
Currently, the Campaign Finance Fund provides qualified participating candidates for city commissioner and auditor with $150,000 to run their campaign. Our interviews with participants indicate that this is a reasonable amount. With the exception of Emily Boyles, it attracted serious candidates who were able to develop credible campaigns and promote their candidacy. We recommend retaining the $150,000 limit, but continue to monitor spending and interview candidates to ensure the amount continues to be adequate but not excessive. Although the issue of independent expenditures did not come up in the May 2006 primary, we feel this is an area that should be monitored going forward. We recommend no changes at this time. Under the current system, if a non-participating candidate spends more than $150,000 on their campaign, matching funds are triggered for participating candidates. The matching amount is equally divided among participating candidates. There has not yet been an opportunity to divide matching funds, so future elections should be monitored to ensure the mechanism works as intended. We recommend no changes to the matching fund system at this time, except to improve the reporting forms for accounts payable and accounts receivable to make sure matching funds are processed smoothly. Watching the May 2006 primary unfold gave us some insight into three types of expenditures that we believe the Campaign Finance Fund should exclude. Although they weren't an issue in the last election cycle, they may occur going forward. The issues are certified participating candidates are responsible for the Campaign Finance Fund revenues they receive. If they are being charged for misuse of campaign finance funds, they might want to hire an attorney or other professional advisor to assist them. It would be a potential conflict of interest for the Campaign Finance Fund to reimburse candidates for misuse of the fund itself. Thus, we recommend that candidates be prohibited from using Campaign Finance Fund revenues to pay for fees for professional services. After an election, campaigns often throw post-election parties. Since these largely occur after the election and the public perceives them as a frivolous, unrelated expense, we recommend that election night parties should be a prohibited use of campaign finance funds. The Campaign Finance Fund allows qualified candidates to employ family members to help run their campaign. Objections to this came up during our interviews with candidates in the May 2006 primary. While we agree that the practice should be discouraged, and the Campaign Finance Fund handbook warns that such employment relationships will be subjected to extra scrutiny, the city attorney's opinion on this matter is that a prohibition against family members is legally unenforceable. Thus, we recommend continuing to advise against employing family members and closely monitor them. Currently, if a certified Campaign Finance Fund candidate commits any spending violation whatsoever, they are decertified, required to repay all public funds, and may be penalized. During our interviews, participating candidates expressed serious concern that this one strike, you're out policy is too severe. We recommend allowing candidates to commit one spending violation of less than $1,000 without decertification, but increase the penalty and deduct it from the candidate's public campaign funds. Non-participating candidates are also currently subject to penalization if they fail to report spending that exceeds $150,000 and whenever they reach additional increments of $5,000 in order to trigger matching funds for participating candidates. Thus, a non-participating candidate who fails to report their expenses in a timely manner has a considerable advantage over their participating counterparts. The current penalties are imposed on a sliding scale and may not be high enough to discourage late reporting by non-participating candidates. Thus, we recommend increasing the penalties for improper reporting of contributions or expenditures by non-participating candidates to equal the amount involved with the $1,000 minimum. The Campaign Finance Fund is not currently set up to allow the auditor to seek immediate recovery of funds from qualified candidates if they commit infractions during the qualifying period or spending violations after certification. We recommend the auditor be given the authority to recover funds immediately. Currently, a participating candidate charged with qualification or spending violations must wait a minimum of 2 weeks before the time they file an appeal and when the appeal is actually heard. The auditor's office allows for up to 21 days to conduct the hearing. The public, other candidates, and the candidate that filed the appeal need to know as soon as possible whether or not they are certified. We recommend reducing the maximum amount of time that a written request for a hearing must be filed from 14 to 7 days after the notice of violation. We also recommend reducing the maximum amount of time from request of a hearing to actual hearing from 21 to 14 days. And this is the last recommendation. The fund is not currently set up to accept voluntary contributions. We recommend the fund be set up to accommodate those that come in after a candidate is certified.
Not sure I understand that last point.
The fund is not currently set up to accept voluntary contributions after a candidate has qualified. In our interviews, we had a number of candidates who said that people wanted to contribute, but they couldn't because they'd already been, the qualification period had ended. So for people.
You mean the $5?
Yes, I'm sorry, the $5 contribution. Because they can only pay the $5 during the qualifying period. And they wanted to support the fund by making.
So the $5 would go to the fund?
To the campaign finance fund.
Not to the candidate, but it would go to the fund.
Right. Well, it ultimately goes to the fund. Right.
So I do have a question on recommendation 21. And it's referenced on page 45 and I think earlier on page 4. And I've read the report and I can't find within here where it speaks to this recommendation to explain it, so maybe you could help me understand it. But it says increase the penalties for improper reporting of contributions or expenditures by non-participating candidates to equal the amount involved with the $1,000 minimum. So a non-participating candidate has some requirements with this system, and if so, what are those?
Oh, go ahead.
Yes, and the improper reporting refers to spending that a campaign finance fund candidate would be eligible for the matching funds over and above the amount that's already been received. So if that non-participating candidate does not follow those reporting requirements, then there are penalties involved.
I see. So if they
fail to report spending within a particular timeline, and that's not laid out in the report, but if those expenditures are reported late, for example, then matching funds can't be issued in a timely way so that the participating candidate can use them.
So late in terms of the state campaign reporting requirements, or late in terms of are there some other timelines that are different from what the state has?
I believe there are some timelines that are different, and there may be some that will be different based on the way that the recommendations we're making are going to fit together. So we're going to leave that to the city attorney to try and put together a timeline.
Because the states are 7 days after during the last 30 days before an election within 7 days of an expenditure or a contribution.
Those dates render the matching funds meaningless because, I mean, you blind in my race, there was a lot of money spent but not reported until after the race was over. And, you know, there's no point in having a matching requirement if you can avoid reporting it so the match isn't. So I don't know exactly what the timeline has to be, but it has to be if in the last week there's large expenditures that would trigger the matching requirement, the campaign commission has to know about it.
I see.
Otherwise, nobody's ever going to trigger the matching. They're going to wait to the last minute. And
so was that part of the existing program, or is this a recommendation to add into the program?
The existence of a penalty system was part of the program, or it is currently part of the program, but it needs to be tightened up.
For non-participating candidates?
Correct.
So are the penalties for improper spending by candidates, both participating and non-participating, the same in terms of dollar amounts?
We're leaving that open. Our recommendation is to change this particular penalty for non-participating candidates. I don't know if they are the same for the participating candidates. I don't know why they wouldn't be, but that seems to be also changing.
So that would be part of the changes we would be asked to enact?
Yes.
Equal this, penalties?
We're waiting to look at the actual recommendations from the city attorney to the code and the rules. So some in certain cases, we're saying increase the penalties, and then we will be looking at actual detailed code and rule changes that will be also given to you to review.
So the goal is to have qualifying and non-qualifying, or participating and non-participating, to be subject to the same level of penalties. I see three heads nodding.
I think so.
Okay.
And have we worked through yet whether that'll be online reporting, or is there some other method, or is that something you're asking the auditor's office to work out?
Well, in terms of spending, we understand.
The reporting of the contributions that we were discussing.
The original contributions, the $5 contributions? No. Okay. I'm sorry.
On this subject, on recommendation 21, a non-qualifying candidate. If a non-qualifying, not a non-qualifying, non-participating candidate, a non-participating candidate receives some money that puts them over whatever that limit is that allows for matching funds for the qualifying candidate. Have you addressed the issue of how that's reported, the mechanics of it?
We haven't addressed the specific mechanics. It could go, I think, two ways. One is to have ORSTAR be the place where those are recorded, and then the auditor's office would be looking at those on a periodic basis. The other way would be to have a separate form on top of what is already having to be reported.
That's not a good idea. Or ORSTAR idea is a good idea.
Well, I'm sorry. Let me see if I can elaborate a little bit. The ORSTAR system is going to be tracking contributions and expenditures through the campaign for participating and non-participating. We've got a higher reporting requirement for participating. For the non-participating, the only thing we ask is that they give us what we call incremental forms. When they've gone over the $150,000, it's a simple form that reports what they've either spent or received or committed to with increments of $5,000 or more. So those are very simple forms, and there's like a next business day deadline for them to submit them to the auditor's office.
They can have an electronic means by which that can happen.
A fax machine is as good as it needs to be. It's a real simple one-page form, so there's nothing fancy to it. But ultimately, it does get reported in the electronic version when it reconciles there. But we needed a shorter timeline just for the non-participating to give their opponents a chance to receive matching money and spend it within that election cycle.
And I'm just thinking about this on the fly. I wouldn't actually start from the premise that the penalties actually have to be the same. I would actually argue that the penalties for abusing the public funds should be more severe. There's a whole legal construct for what you can. If you raise private money to run for office, you're under certain laws, and there's certain enforcements that need to be in place. If you abuse those, that's not our problem. If you decide, which is your choice, that you're going to opt for city financing for your, you should be held to an extraordinarily high standard, and the penalty should be severe if you fraudulently use that money. And I do think one of the things the commission's been looking at is sort of the difference between a small, honest mistake that's caught, like do you get tossed out, and fraudulently using the money. And I think that the offense of fraudulently using public financing money for elections is much worse to me than some of the other pieces. There just needs to be a strong enough penalty on the immediate reporting at the end so that a candidate can't drop $100,000 in at the last minute and then not trigger the matching requirement because they don't tell the auditor. So to me, it's kind of two completely separate different pieces that, that just need to be thought through. And the bar on the last one just needs to be high enough that people aren't going to do it. In terms of reporting it. It needs to be a simple, easy thing.
Yeah, but isn't it possible there could be a scenario where a participating candidate would, at the last minute, do a loan to themselves or receive a large cash contribution and effectively, maybe
they
win the election and then face the consequences later.
But they would owe all the money back that they
would owe all the money back plus penalties.
Interest, and you'd probably avoid the election. So
it's a pretty steep payback to have
something
happen.
Would happen.
Would it void the election? I understand the payback.
No, I don't think we would need to have a charter change to void the election. But
my question on this recommendation, just to be clear, this recommendation doesn't deal at all with qualified candidates.
Right.
This recommendation is exclusively on non-participating candidates. So I'm raising the question, and you'll notice I didn't raise the question of the amount of the penalty either. That's not my concern. My concern is that you have multiple levels of requirements of a candidate during the final days mm-hmm. of a campaign that may kick in some reporting requirement that falls through the crack, and I want to make it as seamless and as consistent with the state regulations as is possible so that an honest mistake doesn't happen in terms of reporting something that should have been reported. And it just worries me. I just need to think this through about the extra form thing. I mean, mm-hmm. I liked if it was like an or star. In other words, if you said, and I know we're not voting on this language, it's a report, but just so people, if you said you're required for the purposes of Portland's ordinance, reporting ordinance, if you're a non-participating candidate, to post expenditures or contributions immediately, not within 7 days, but immediately this far out from the end of election, and then you have these penalties, I'm good with that.
Well, they could do it with OrStar, but they would have to notify us that they just put it up because we may not look at it every day. I mean, I guess we could at the end of the election.
I bet you the other side does. I've practiced at that already, and I watch OrStar about half dozen times a day right now, and I'm mm-hmm. sure.
Well, we have.
I'm not real worried about somebody noticing a contribution in the final days of a campaign.
Well, I think it's important for them to positively notify us when they have exceeded it.
Again, my point isn't not to do that or not to penalize. It's to make it as seamless and as least cumbersome as possible so people don't, in the final days of a campaign, as you know, becomes mm-hmm. insane that somebody just forgets the email. But, you know, but people should know, okay, you're within this many days of the election day. The state says every 7 days, within 7 days, we're saying within 24 hours, you have to report it.
Well, and the participant candidate, I mean, I don't think if it's necessarily, if they had to post it on the Secretary of State's website, the participating candidate has to request the matching funds. The auditor's office doesn't go and find them and say, here's your money. And so if a campaign isn't on top of it enough to look at the Secretary of State's website in the last, then I think that's their mistake. I mean, so I think something like that would be fine. I mean, one of the things that I think is the most, one of the benefits of this system is that it actually does push to some extent the amount of money spent down for sure, but it also forces candidates to kind of think through what's their strategy. So last time around you had Commissioner Saltzman who did not participate but purposely limited his funding down to the level of a participating candidate because not wanting to trigger the matching funds. Well, that's unprecedented. I participated. My opponent went over the matching funds. And so you actually have this whole, there's no serious non-participating candidate who's going to be running against a participating candidate who doesn't know exactly what happens when they go over $150,000. It's not the dates before the election. It could be 3 months before the election. It's as soon as you go over the 150, and they're going to be plotting very carefully why they would want to go over 150 if in fact they do, and trigger the matching funds, you know, because you had those two totally different and very, I think, you know, interesting dynamics in the two different races. And so that's really the key is just that if they do decide to go over the 150, you know, in the case of my race, and, you know, I think it was a learning experience. I don't think anybody violated the rules, but they played the rules perfectly and did not report the money until the election was over.
Right. And OrStar is actually a perfect vehicle to address this.
It is.
The time and requirement.
We're very fortunate to have that.
It really is. It's a great system. And to the extent we could do what Commissioner Sten recommended, that would make me feel a lot better to put the onus on the candidate to make sure they post it right away. That's their responsibility. But the challenger should be the one that goes, hey, Gary, guess what? 2 a.m. last night, I was having to be watching OrStar, and they kicked in over, you know, they're at 175. I want my other 125. And that's, by the way, exactly how it'll happen.
Mm-hmm. This came up for us in a lot of conversations, is in responding to the problems we had, we also did not want to create fixes that were so onerous that nobody wanted to campaign under the system.
Yeah.
We want to keep things as streamlined as possible and as error-proof as possible
right.
to make it easier for the candidates to do the right thing, not harder.
So, did you have a question?
He always asks questions.
the disqualification of a participating candidate if there's an outstanding money judgment. I guess what's the rationale behind that, and does that apply also to bankruptcies as well?
That relates to Emily Boyles in particular. She had a judgment against her that would indicate to us in our discussions that perhaps she'd had some mishandling of finances in the past or something that resulted in a money judgment, which is a serious result from some financial mishap in the past. Mm-hmm. And all we're requiring
is that... Does that apply to bankruptcies?
No, it does not.
And it's... Even if the money judgment has been satisfied, it's
no. It needs to be resolved before that person continues on in the process.
Okay. And it's applying only to court-ordered money judgments,
right? And if there are ongoing payments, for example, child support, as long as they're not in arrears, that's all right. So we may help make sure candidates do their duty.
Truly family friendly.
Yeah.
The other nice thing about it. Was the fact that if a candidate is interested, finds out there's this problem or this issue regarding the unsatisfied judgments, they can take care of that and then continue to try and qualify.
Right. Are signature gatherers, not signature gatherers, but I guess contribution gatherers, are they allowed to be paid by the contribution, by the campaign?
I mean, it's hard to draw a line where paying begins and ends in any campaign because, you know, there's...
I guess I'm, paying by per $5. I mean, if you bring me 20 $5 contributions, I'm going to pay you $7 each or something like that.
There is a prohibition against the individual who made the contribution getting paid. Meaning
how about an individual collecting?
Not at this point. We had several people, or at least one campaign, try to do that and failed very quickly. So it's one of those issues where we have people, campaign managers and so forth, that as part of their duties they're supposed to go out and gather contributions. So it's difficult to draw a line and say you can't do that.
And then on your requiring immediate repayment in case of infractions, I guess how would that be accomplished, or have you given thought to making the auditor a joint signer on a campaign account? That seems to be the quickest way to deal with an infraction. Otherwise, you're trapped at the mercies of the court process.
I hadn't thought about that. It's an interesting idea.
I leave that for something to think
about.
We'll
check with the city attorney on that.
And then I guess my last questions really are, I still feel that family members should be prohibited from employment or prohibited from leasing transactions. You shouldn't be able to sort of lease something from a family member. And then my favorite, you did eliminate out-of-state travel, but I also still feel we should eliminate leasing of automobiles. I don't think that's covered anywhere, and I see that as a potential coming back to haunt us at a future mm-hmm. date. And then the independent expenditures, I guess that is my last point. I understand Maine, which is one of the states that this was looked at when it was modeled upon, does have an independent expenditure, has dealt with that issue, that an independent expenditure campaign against a non-participating candidate would increase that non-participating candidate's threshold by an equal amount before triggering matching. So did you look at that?
We did. And I actually had written it down to read to you, but I thought it was too long, so I took it out. But of course, now I'm drawing a blank.
So if you're not allowing for the rental of an automobile, does that include not allowing for the reimbursement of expenses if one were to own an automobile for campaign-related activities? Is that different? Or?
I think I recall that was one of my original concerns was, both, was kind of, reimbursing or leasing.
Because I think we need to be consistent. I mean, if you're going to say you don't rent a car, then you have to say no automobile-related expenses.
No, I agree.
I agree. Concern? I can't remember it.
Oh, on that issue?
Yeah.
Oh, I just think it's a potential embarrassment waiting to happen. Yeah, somebody's going to lease a very nice car for 6 months. 8 months.
Or even just
reimburse themselves. I think most candidates don't reimburse themselves from campaign funds for miles traveled or anything like that. I just think it's one of those things that
could be
a potential abuse.
State elections law does restrict personal, income from campaign expenditures, and among those things are like automobiles. So leasing a vehicle would definitely raise flags not only here but in Salem for
not when a campaign reimburses for related automobile expenses, though. That's allowed under the state.
Well, I think that's there is a line that can be drawn between leasing and mileage.
I think both should be prohibited. I don't think they agree with that. But
and Commissioner,
I guess on the independent expenditures, if you want, we can talk about this further. I just want to raise that. I know Maine has dealt with this issue. You did say that you think it's an issue, but you're going to wait to a later date to deal with it. But it's a potential issue. Being somebody who could easily be subject to an independent expenditure campaign.
I was going to say that Arizona has adopted language to deal with push polling, in which an independent organization seeks to aggressively influence voters under the guise of an independent poll toward a certain pro or con position. In those circumstances, matching funds are triggered for the offended candidate. Maine imposes penalties on participating candidates if it is determined that independent expenditures aided their candidacies. But we are recommending no changes at this time. But it should be monitored.
We went through a lot of scenarios, and it was really difficult in a hypothetical framework. And we did look at what Maine was doing and what Arizona had done. And from our perspective, it was difficult to try to guess which way independent expenditures could go beyond what we already had in the rules.
That's right. I mean, it's not too hard to figure out potential scenarios one side or the other.
But then writing,
I sense there's a reticence to want to do something when you have two states that have already stepped forward, two states that we modeled ours after.
Right. And we did forward,
that have had more experience.
We did model the independent expenditure language on those two states. So to the degree that it's reflected already in the code was where we looked at to see what scenarios we could add to it. But given that we really didn't have a track record to work from, we were a little concerned, I think, about trying to build out all the hypotheticals that would come from that.
Well, I would think there should be some discretion. You should build in some discretion to either the commission or the auditor to deal with the situations as they may emerge. Mm. Maybe there's a range of options that you can be petitioned to employ.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something maybe to think about.
Okay.
Under F, the source of qualifying contributions, I am concerned that that Portland residents, unless they're voters, cannot contribute. Did you look at other ways to try to handle this rather than crossing out that group of residents of Portland?
I was concerned about that, too, as many people were in. One of our workaround for that is that the campaigns can register them to vote. And then it's up to the campaigns to make sure that those registrations get back into the county in time for that, for them to show up then when those signatures get checked.
But if the rule says they have to be a registered voter, at the time that you sign this form, they don't. They just have to be registered.
At the verification, they have to be registered. It's different than, most people with initiatives, the state law is very different around that they have to be registered within 24 hours of signing the petition. But we can actually allow a longer period of time from when someone signs till their voter card gets in, as long as they're registered at the verification time point.
I have just a couple of questions, and I need to thanks for your work. I really appreciate it. Was a supporter of this first time around. Remain a supporter and need to study this and digest it. But a couple of just smaller items. Why I don't see the additional work of taking credit cards. It's the campaign's work to take and process the credit card. It's not additional work for the auditor, and it's actually quite a good verification trail option. So what was the thinking around not taking credit cards? Most campaigns are already set up or easily set up with a merchant account to take credit cards.
Well, we can probably all chip in on this because we had lively conversations about it. One is that the campaigns we interviewed did not suggest that this was a problem. And second of all is we did not want it set up so that people could do in a web-based campaign. We want this to be a person-to-person grassroots-style campaign. And then there is the cost of credit card transactions as well. So those were three things that come to my mind. That
why do you care if it's done on the web or not? Why do we care?
It decreases the face-to-face contact with voters. And.
But you already allow other people to go out and collect this anyway, so it kind of undercuts your argument.
Except we'd have to change the threshold if we had broadcast emails going out to, you know, thousands of people. So suddenly the electronic candidate could easily hit 1,000, whereas someone who's actually going out, you know, one-on-one with people would be at a huge disadvantage. So,
but you already have that potential problem in allowing surrogates to go out and get the...
Not so much of a potential.
No, you do. Those of us that have been around a long time and know a lot of people and ask 10 people to go out and get, you know, 10 signatures, it's not hard to do.
10 contributions.
10 contributions and signatures. So I don't... I understand your concern, but I'm not sure that the solution that you proposed is either logically consistent nor incredibly useful.
There were some great arguments to go forward with credit card transactions, as you just proposed, and it's something that is definitely worthy of consideration going forward, but we just thought there are so many other changes that perhaps waiting for another election cycle and seeing if the feedback from candidates is still consistent with that.
The other thing I'd just point out is that the grassroots insurgencies have been web-based in this country.
Presidential.
Presidential. And so it clearly is a tool for grassroots insurgents that are outside the mainstream. So to assume that it's otherwise is true in some cases, but not true necessarily in all cases.
Well, I would just throw out that I think that it's difficult to compare national presidential campaigns and the efforts required to reach voters on that level versus citywide candidates, and that by allowing credit cards in citywide races, you're essentially creating a cottage industry for those that could that are inherently, as organizations, well organized, have the ability to literally in a day collect the money and the signatures one needs to qualify for this these funds, and it seems to me to not be comparable with a national effort where you literally have to have efforts like that to have any chances of success. I think here it would confound the intent of the stated intent of the program to open it up.
Well, then you've got to shut this off from having surrogates go out and get your $5. You can't logically say...
No, you don't. Relationships are different than having pen pals on a computer.
I disagree.
And you can have...
You can have the Sierra Club go out and get your checks, your Sierra Club OCB, and get your checks in a short amount of time.
But that's based on going and talking and having relationships versus essentially having somebody just assure you they can go out and get these signatures for you. All you have to do is give them the okay, a la something akin to which we saw in this last campaign. And literally in a day, by having a sophisticated system, getting the contribution.
I understand what you're saying, but... It is not intellectually consistent. You have not convinced me on that.
Well, I'm not trying to convince you.
I'm not talking to them.
I am too. I was.
You haven't
interrupted
me,
by the way.
You haven't convinced me yet. I want to make it easy for people to participate in this, and you know, We're going to get to credit cards.
Well, I don't think that's the point to make it easy for to participate. I mean, then just cut anybody who walks in and have it.
We're trying to make it easier for the non-traditional candidate to participate in city elections.
Have these fine folks sit at an interview table, and if they like somebody, hand them a check for $150,000. Say, well, you think you're a good non-traditional candidate. Or do you want to employ what I think is really the intent is to get people who are highly motivated, willing to go out, do the work, as we also saw in this last campaign, establish the contacts, establish the relationships, ask for $5, get the signature. As at least one candidate I've talked to at this last round, that was a very trying.
You keep repeating your argument, but it still remains intellectually inconsistent.
You can keep interrupting me, but I will
still
finish.
Well, I only have so much time to live on this planet. So.
Well, I sit and listen to you.
This is the first time I've talked on this issue this afternoon.
First time you've talked in weeks.
I know, so let me talk. The other issue is...
We like each other, too. We're squabbling. We like each other.
Sure you guys are making a case for or against public finance.
Yeah, I'm just arguing with him. I just find the need to argue with him.
Just knock it off.
You're surely making a case for making it easier to challenge incumbents. I can assure you.
I'm trying to make the case to make it easier to challenge incumbents. So the other question I had is just a practical one. I have about $25,000 in debt from the last campaign. So how is
now it? I get it now.
How is it treated? How is that treated under this scenario?
Like it always has been, it's sequestered that you can't use any of your public campaign funds to deal with that. And literally it's frozen. So you can't fundraise while you're campaigning to deal with that. So you either got to get it resolved.
By July 1st?
Yeah.
Okay. That's all I wanted. I just want to ask for my money back at some point.
I apologize, Commissioners and Mayor. I have to go do something else.
I'm done.
So I have to leave.
Can I go with you?
Sorry.
Thanks, Gary.
Why do you hate grassroots candidates? That's what I want to know.
I just hate you. I don't
hate further questions? Thank you, folks.
I do want to take a moment to thank the staff, Gary Blackmer and Diane Betcher and Susan Francois and then Andrew Carlstrom, who's the new city elections officer. They could not have been more helpful and given us better guidance. We really appreciated their work month after month, week after week, and during all the excitement of the investigations, their daily guidance. They were terrific. So we hope that you accept our report. We hope that you keep the system and that you accept all or most of our recommendations to strengthen it. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your work.
Thanks for everything.
Thank you. Are there more people that you wish to bring forward other than those who have signed up?
No, Eric ran this.
How many do we have signed up?
We have four signed up.
Okay. Please call the first.
The first three are Carol Cushman, Amanda Fritz, and Bill Harris.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here, folks. When you speak, please state your name for the record. You each have 3 minutes.
Thank you. I'm Carol Cushman, representing the League of Women Voters of Portland. The League enthusiastically supported Portland's campaign finance fund, and we're pleased to be here today to address the Citizen Campaign Commission's first report and recommendations. We appreciate the Commission's work. They have taken their charge seriously and have made excellent recommendations. The program is a work in progress and will require constant evaluation and change as we experience new situations such as open seats, fall runoffs, independent expenditures. Fortunately, the Commission has shown that it is up to the task, and we're confident they'll continue to monitor the system with great care. For the most part, we support the recommendations outlined in the report. The recommendation tightening the signature gathering requirements are essential and should prevent the type of incidents we experienced in 2006. The proposed signature form is an improvement, eliminating confusion with initiative petitions, and makes clear who is eligible to contribute as well as a penalty for signing inappropriately. We feel allowing candidates and campaign volunteers to register voters or provide registration cards for later submission maintains the focus of broadening participation and getting more citizens connected to and interested in voting and in their government. Based on the information gathered by the Commission, adjusting the qualifying period forward to include summer makes sense. We are concerned, however, that the December deadline for submission of 30% of the qualifying contributions might exclude excellent and viable candidates whose efforts might peak later than others. We prefer to see early submissions encouraged and offered as an option for candidates wanting to check their progress. Circumstances could eliminate highly qualified candidates if a December deadline is adopted. We're fortunate that this City Council had the courage and foresight to adopt Portland's Campaign Finance Fund 2 years ago. The success of the system depends to a large extent on the future actions of you, our current council members, and will be enhanced by your full participation in the system. Further, because collecting qualifying contributions is labor-intensive and time-consuming, late announcements of candidacy by incumbents could sabotage the system by shutting the door on broad participation of new candidates, particularly in conjunction with if the December deadline is kept. The League will be disappointed if incumbents don't consider the long-term success of the program when making decisions about announcing candidacy and participation in the system. And once again, we thank the Citizen Campaign Commission for an excellent report and recommendations.
So just so I understand, so your concern is that if an incumbent waits till after the December deadline, therefore being able to say, well, I'm not eligible, or?
Well, the way I read the recommendations, if someone is going to qualify to be a candidate under the Campaign Finance Fund, they have to turn in 30% of their signatures and $5 contributions by the 1st of December. If, and it just, you know, from reading some newspaper articles, it seems that there's a possibility that we might not know if there's an open seat until the middle of November or the first part of December. That makes it almost impossible for a group of candidates to collect their 30% by the 1st of December.
Got it.
So it's two things that together could make a problem.
I'm Amanda Fritz, speaking for myself, and I want to start by thanking the Commission for all their hard work. Thank the Council for adopting this revolutionary program last year. I'm not sure that it didn't make any difference in the outcome in my race. However, my children thank you, because I didn't end up with a $25,000 debt, so they're still able to go to college this year. So I appreciate it greatly. It made a big difference to me. And I also will start by thanking Tim Crail, Linda Robinson, and Edward Fritz, who were the three people who, with me, checked every one of my 1,045 signatures. I think we ended up checking each one five times at least to make sure that they were all correct. And the almost 100 people who helped me collect signatures from 90 of the city's 95 neighborhoods. It did open up the process to so many more people, and we are all very grateful for it. These are good recommendations, and I hope you will adopt them. And I know there's going to be another hearing to look at the specifics, and I look forward to that. I would like you to adopt them and then immediately ask the Commission to continue its work to define rules for a special election. There is currently no process or timeline for if there is an open seat. For instance, if the Gates Foundation were to offer any one of you $300,000 to go work for them, that might, you know, open up a seat. None of us know what's going to happen in the future, and we need this process more than ever in a special election. So please direct the Commission to start work on that immediately. I support the revised timeline and second the League of Women Voters in encouraging incumbents to declare preferably by July 1st, but certainly by the end of September, because some of us are not going to run if there isn't an open seat. So, and certainly it would be more challenging to gather signatures and donations running against such popular incumbents. So that, I second that.
Except Randy.
Randy's already announced, and I've already announced that I'm not running against him, so there we go.
You've already announced?
6 months ago.
In writing.
I missed the event.
Yeah.
You got to read Mercury Blogtown. It's such
read
a great...
the Mercury blog.
Oh, we got to read
Read the Mercury. I have four minor administrative issues to discuss with you, and Mayor, I hope that you will allow me a few extra seconds to talk about this, since I think I have the most experience in this actual system. First of all, I'd like to see an administrative rule that covers the loan of small in-kind donations. We spent 2 days in my campaign having all staff discussions about the potential value of two folding chairs and how we should declare it and what it might be if we had to declare it. There should be some de minimis loan or gifts to or use of substances that would not be required to be reported. Secondly, the language on return of funds after the election doesn't quite work, given that there are bank charges and phone bills and things that come in after the 30 days. I was more than happy to donate money for my own election party and for other things that I felt shouldn't be used for